the VA Health and Benefits app. The tool is like a one-stop shop for veterans. It allows them to view or cancel VA medical appointments, send and receive messages from healthcare providers, and download VA benefit letters to provide veteran status or disability payments. Veterans can also manage existing VA claims, find the closest VA medical centers, and get quick access to the VA crisis line. You can download the Health and Benefits app on your iPhone or at the Google App Store, or wherever you normally get your mobile apps. If you already use this app, please share your feedback on your phone's app store. That's the VA Health and Benefits mobile app. I'm Mike Richman.
Good evening, everyone. Happy Tuesday, and welcome to the Dog Tag Diva podcast. I am very excited to have an amazing guest with me tonight, Carrie Reichbach from Gray Team. And Carrie is a highly skilled Army soldier and commando who had the privilege of serving his country with distinction during the Cold War. After leaving the Army in 1984, he began losing many of his fellow soldiers to suicide over the course of several years. Mr. Reichbach decided to take action and founded Gray Team with the sole goal of reducing the number of suicides happening within the military community. He solidified his standing as a leader in health and wellness by taking on advisory roles at Florida Army National Guard, the Salvation Army's Veteran Care, the American Legion, United States Special Operations Command, and Congresswoman Lois Frankel's Veteran Advisory Board, and Florida State Representative Emily Slosberg's Veterans Committee. In January 2021, Mr. Reichbach was recognized as one of the most influential people in preventing military veteran suicides by the American Legion and Military.com. Welcome to the show, Carrie. I'm so excited and honored to have you on the show tonight. How are you?
I am doing fantastic. And I want to thank you for giving me this opportunity.
I'm very happy to do it. You know, I'm a Navy nurse of 12 years and counting, but a nurse for 25. And one of the things that I have recognized over the last 12 years of my career as things have been happening is there's a lot of things that go on outside of the military that we're not talking about while we're in. And those are the conversations that I think that we need to be having, because I'm a proactive person. What can we do to prevent the things that are happening once we get out? How do we support each other once we get out? How do we transition once we get out? A lot of people, they have a life of service and then they get out of the military and they kind of find themselves fumbling. So anytime I can get people connected to resources and support, in my book, that's a win. And I have found that post-pandemic healthcare in my career has been a struggle. And these are the kinds of things that I love doing. It's getting people connected and putting that information out there. The other thing I have come to realize is that there are resources out there for veterans, but the states don't necessarily do a good job of advertising what's out there. So I feel the more that we stay connected, those of us who are still in the service and those of us who are out, the better off we're all going to be. One team, one fight, and model the behavior and slowly but surely create that ripple effect to our civilian counterparts as well. So I'm very happy to have you on and talk about Gray Team. You have quite an impressive resume. Your website is impressive. Your foundation is impressive. So tell us more about yourself and how Gray Team came about and what it encompasses, and Phoenix Rising and the hyperbaric chamber, which gives me claustrophobia just looking at it.
Well, all great questions. Great Team came about basically because we saw the need. My friends and I, including one special friend, my co-founder at Great Team, he was a Marine, did two combat deployments to Afghanistan, and came back with TBI, PTSD, and which led to suicidal ideation. And, you know, rather than seeing one more, you know, join that the ranks of those who are committing suicide every year, it just seemed like something has to be done prior to the crisis situation. And I know that modern reactive rather than proactive. You know, we don't treat diabetes until your blood sugar reaches, you know, 130, and then you're diabetic. But at 128, we don't talk to you about it, you know. And it's kind of the same way with the military and suicide prevention. You know, when you're actually in crisis is when we take action. You know, when you dial that 1-800 don't kill yourself number, that's when we get involved. And the government locks you up, and, you know, but there is so much time prior to that that something could have been done. And I think that's the biggest issue is to be proactive. You know, all those months before somebody was in crisis, you know, they're in pain, you know, whether that's physical pain, emotional pain, mental pain, what have you. It doesn't need to just be, you know, we're soldiers, so we're taught, you know, just suck it up and move on. But you can only live with pain for so long, and then you start looking for alternatives, and either you're going to self-medicate or you're going to take yourself out. And unfortunately, there is a lot that can be done that isn't being put out there. We use an awful lot of alternative methods at Great Team that are super, super progressive. I'm not sure if you're familiar with the term biohacking.
I am not familiar with the term. I saw your Facebook post that you appeared in, and your organization appeared in Biohacker magazine. I couldn't get to read the article because you have to have a subscription to the magazine, but I would love for you to expand upon the magazine and what the article was about.
Sure. So biohacking started about 10 years ago, prior to COVID, prior to anything. It was when people got invested in their own health, you know, and again, looking at prevention rather than dealing with the after effects of disease. So people started looking for alternative ways to upgrade their health without actually, you know, waiting until there's crisis, whether you're having a heart attack, you know, you're diabetic, you've got all these things that starts to fall down like dominoes. And people just said, hey, this is wrong. This is, you know, medicine 1.0 was kind of when we discovered that there were these little microscopic things called germs that we couldn't see, but they caused disease. And you probably, the knife that you used, the scalpel you used in the morning to cut up a cadaver and do an autopsy should be sterilized before you do surgery that evening on somebody live. Okay. Nobody knew that before. You can't see germs, but we created this whole thing and medicine 1.0 became medicine 2.0. And we started sterilizing things and keeping track of what was clean, what was dirty. And that's kind of where we're at now with hospitals. You know, everything is clean, everything is sterilized, but at the same time, we're still waiting until we have a crisis. We're waiting until you have a heart attack to save you, you know. All the crud didn't build up in your arteries, you know, right before you had the heart attack. It started 20 right. years prior. So biohacking came about when people said, I don't want to wait. You know, I want to fix these problems before they start. So this whole community started all across the world. And there are conventions and medical counseling, that all kinds of conventions and things that take place all over the planet. And people fly in from everywhere and go to these congresses where they're guest speakers, and they learn about how to prolong healthy life and wellness, you know, not necessarily to live longer, but to live longer without disease, you know, because nobody wants to live to 100, but be in a wheelchair and be in a nursing home. You know, you want to be able to bounce your great grandchildren on your lap and play with them on the floor. And in order to do that, there are steps that you have to take prior. Okay. So we at Gray Team thought, what an amazing resource this is. What if we take biohacking and we make that available to military? Because military has, as you well know, we have some of the most severe problems there are. You know, we operate on a 24-hour schedule. You know, we don't sleep well. We have super high cortisol. You know, we have all kinds of physical pain from humping with, you know, 70 plus pounds on our backs. You know, everything is out of. We have so
marginal nutrition, depending on where you are in the field, MREs, you 100%. Know, protein, slamming monsters. And
yes,
100%. Things you shouldn't be doing.
You nailed it. So the idea of taking these tools and providing them at no cost to our military was something that we had to get involved with. So a Gray Team, you know, we have no pharmaceutical interventions, but what we do is we're firing low-level lasers right through your skull into your brain to drop inflammation, speed, all of your circulation, and allow the healing process to take place for traumatic brain injury, for post-traumatic stress, which is a chemical inflammation. We can drop that using something as simple as a helmet that fires lasers through the human skull. We do that all the time. We provide EEGs, electroencephalogram, so we can see which areas of the brain are damaged and not putting out enough microvoltage. And we can actually determine what areas we need to hit. And we can actually do pre and post tests 30 minutes apart to show how effective the technology is. We use pulse electromagnetic frequencies. We use vibroacoustics in order to decelerate the fight or flight syndrome that so many combat veterans are coming back with. Infrared sauna, hyperbaric oxygen. The list is really endless. And these are typically tools that you would find, you know, in Tony Robbins' house, because he's a biohacker, you know, but he's also a billionaire, right? And none of this would be available if you go to the VA. In fact, the VA doesn't know that any of this stuff is even in existence, even though we've brought representatives down to go through our facility over the last 6 years. Somehow the message never hits the higher ups. They walk out of here going, oh my God, this is the most amazing thing. Excuse me. I can't wait to tell all of my supervisors. And then we never hear another thing.
Yeah. And I actually, I'm putting your website in the chat, and I also put all the links to all your social media in the chat as well, so people can see. I'm a visual person, so I wanted to make sure people can see things. So I put all those links in the chat for anybody listening, or when we post this to all the social media sites after we're done, the recording will get posted, and all that information is going to get posted up there. And as I said, grayteam.org is the site is very comprehensive. If you have any questions about the organization and what you do, you can go to that site and find it. I'm not tech savvy. I can't remember if I was talking to you or somebody else about how it says RN behind my name, not IT. But I found your site very user-friendly, easy to find things, look things up, you know, all the things that Gray Team has to offer. And I thought that was really, I thought that was really quite good. Some websites you go on and you can't find things. And ease of use, and I think is really important to A, get the message out there, and B, so people can realize all that you guys have to offer. And just for people who don't know, or maybe just tuning in, you are based out of Boca Raton, Florida, correct?
Correct.
Okay. So because I'm here, I'm in Clearwater, and I follow a lot of veteran sites here in the state of Florida, and I still follow some back home in New Jersey. But for anybody watching, listening, who's not from the state of Florida, do you only treat people in the state, or can people come from out of state?
We have people coming from all over the country. You know, it really depends on their need, you know, and how fixed we are for financing at that moment when they apply. A lot of times we are capable of putting them up for a period of time. Typically, our program is 90 days. However, we have the ability to condense it down. You know, we could do it in 30 days if we really needed to. So for those who can't take, you know, 90 days away from their job or their family or so on, you know, we make exceptions. But it typically is a 90-day program, and it's customized to an individual's needs. So, you know, not everyone has PTSD. Not everyone has traumatic brain injury. You know, hyperbaric oxygen is a fantastic tool, compressing sitting into a tank and compressing, you know, the atmosphere down with pure oxygen down to 2 atmospheres is amazing. It actually oxygenates, and that plasma is able to go into the little tiny microcapillaries in the brain. You're breathing that in, it's going directly into the brain, and it starts to heal things all over the body. You know, and basically you're just giving the body the extra oxygen it needs to begin the healing process faster. You know, you probably remember, you know, when you were a kid and you had a cut, and after a while your mom said, take the Band-Aid off and let the air get to it. It'll heal faster. Let it breathe. Same thing with your body. Okay. Oxygen is a fuel for healing. So if we can compress oxygen into smaller pieces that can slip through the bloodstream, we can heal your body much faster, whether that's your brain or a wound, post-surgery, anything like that.
Yeah, hyperbaric's been around for quite a number of years. And I have, as a nurse, I'm experienced using it for people who have been in like severe fires and have had like smoke inhalation. And we put them in there to kind of help wake them up to get, like you said, the oxygen deep into the tissues and try to wake up all the tissues in the cells to get them to wake up. We use it for people who have severe wounds and need some healing. So we have been using it quite a bit. And so I totally get the use of the hyperbaric oxygen to kind of treat a multitude of symptoms. I think it's a great healthcare tool, but it's non-medical, so to speak. You know, as my son is very anti-big pharma. And so the opportunities for people who don't want to necessarily take medications and try alternative methods, like many biohackers do, you know, I totally support that, because there, and a lot of times we need to multimodal treat. My only issue with hyperbaric is like, I'm severely claustrophobic and I can't even look at it without having like a heart attack or hyperventilating. I mean, I can remember several years ago when I worked at a hospital in Philadelphia, we had a patient that had to go down to the oxygen chamber, who I think was either had a bad wound maybe, and the nurse had to go with them into the chamber. And I was like, negative, count me out, find somebody else, not doing it. But it works. I fully support its use. I just can't be the person that goes into the tank. That's why I won't be scuba diving.
Fair enough. It is highly effective. And depending on the tank, you know, the one we have at Gray Team is not the most least hyper. I would have to say so there are ones that are made completely out of really thick plexi, you know, that it's a clear tube and you really don't get claustrophobic. We don't have that at Gray Team. Ours has some viewing ports, but you are enclosed. And we haven't had a problem yet with anybody, you know, having claustrophobia, but we have Vietnam vets who have claustrophobia and won't go near something like that. So we will use the larger tanks that are clear for them. And even then they have a little bit of an issue. We also have a full body photobiomodulation bed where we're using low level laser therapy in the near and mid and far infrared, as well as 680 nanometers of red. And it looks like a tanning bed. It's completely non-invasive. You have a 20 minute exposure. And in the same way that plants are able to obtain energy from the sun, from ultraviolet light, at the other end of the color spectrum is infrared. And mammals like us, we don't react to ultraviolet the way plants do in photosynthesis, but we do react to infrared and 680 nanometers of red. And what that does is it actually charges up our whole body on a cellular level. So everything starts to move easier, heals, increases microcirculation, just begins the healing process much, much quicker, reduces inflammation all over the body and thereby reducing pain. So, but we have had individuals who said, if you close that lid, I'm pushing it right back open and I'm getting out. And unfortunately, they were in experiences. We had one Vietnam vet who, you know, told this horrifying tale of how, you know, he had all these other Marines climb on top of him during the initiation of a raid by the North Vietnamese, and they had 500 North Vietnamese soldiers against 5 Americans, and they couldn't engage, so they were hiding, and they kind of piled, and he had severe claustrophobia from that for the rest of his life. So I get it, you know, but I think there are ways around it. We can, you know, we can use other methodologies. You know, there isn't one size fits all. And as you said, it's multimodalities. So, you know, without using any pharmaceuticals to mask the symptoms, we can get to the root of the problem by a combination of these modalities.
And how long is like a hyperbaric treatment, the phototherapy, like how long is it, X number of time over X number of treatments? How does it work?
Great question. So hyperbaric is typically 20 or 40 sessions, and each session is about 90 minutes. And it's really going to depend on the severity of what the issue is. You know, for us veterans who've been blown up, you know, we're probably going to need 40 sessions to show a big difference in our neurocognitive skills. And we will heal from that. For something a little bit more minor, 20 sessions would probably, and it's one and done. You know, you probably won't need to go through another course of those. And there, we do have tests that can show that your neurocognitive ability has stabilized. You know, it's not dropping off. You can speak clearly. You can finish a thought without wondering what you were talking about in the first place. And that's where a lot of guys come to us, you know, that have been in explosions from vehicle-borne IEDs or planted in the roadways. And even though they have all their arms and legs, you know, they've got severe brain trauma. And it isn't diagnosed right away. And because it's invisible, typically, you know, they'll go to their commander and they say, yeah, why don't you take the day off? You know, and you won't go on a mission until tomorrow. But they don't realize that the effects of that blast are just beginning. There's going to be a swelling there from the brain hit smacking into the side of their skull, because it is floating in liquid. And as the swelling increases, that's when it starts to cut off those little microcapillaries and they start to have brain damage. And it may not manifest for 3 or 6 months, but slowly you'll see behavioral changes. You'll see loss of vocabulary. You'll see all kinds of little tiny changes that get progressively worse and worse. And so many times, you know, we speak to parents who say, I hope you can help my son. You know, he came home and he's not the same person anymore. And he's not, because his behaviors have been modified by this swelling. And giving somebody drugs, you know, giving them antipsychotics or antidepressants, it's not going to fix that. You know, it's just going to numb them down. And that's kind of where our medical system is right now, unfortunately, is when you complain about these things, you're given drugs rather than actually fixing the problem.
Yeah, I was telling somebody that I feel that I've been a nurse for 25 years. And like I said, the post-pandemic world I'm struggling with, because there's just a lot of things that are going on that I'm not a fan of. You know, I was deployed to Afghanistan in 2015 and came home with what I would say is a mild case of PTSD. But then I feel as though working during the pandemic kind of magnified it. And then in that time frame, the fall of Afghanistan kind of, you know, elevated that feeling too. And so it's been, for me, a struggle post-pandemic working in this healthcare environment. And I completely respect people who don't want to take medication. And I've kind of always felt that way, that we have to have room for a holistic approach because, you know, yes, there is a time and place for, you know, medication, but there's also a time and place for aromatherapy and biofeedback and massage. And, you know, I can remember being in nursing school and being taught how to give patients, like during a bed bath, give them a massage to increase skin circulation and, you know, improve, you know, their mobility and their, you know, overall well-being. And now I feel as though I spend so much time in front of a computer documenting things, like where is my patient and the care and the that interaction of, yes, I'm here to take care of you, the whole person, not just, you know, sit in front of you and, you know, this, that, it's all technology. And we're kind of getting so tech heavy that I'm thinking to myself, like, how are these new nurses going to function in this age of, like, you know, like I grew up on paper, you know, we figured everything out by hand. We hung the IV bag with the tape and did the calculations. And now we're like scanning a barcode on the patient, scanning the medication, and it goes into the computer. And I'm like, where is the thinking and the personalization of how are we taking care of this person? And it's your approach, your organization is really doing something quite phenomenal. One of the things that I found quite impressive about your website was the paper about, hey, here's what we're doing and here's how it works and here's why it works and here's the evidence to show that it works. Everything is out there for everyone to see. There is no hidden agenda. There's no information that's hidden. And being open and honest about what you're doing, I think is just like just refreshing to say, well, you know, without sounding trite, but it is. I feel like there's so much industry out there that's trying to cover things up and hide things and, you know, like the shell game. And I'm just, this is, I, you know, something that I feel that I would feel comfortable referring any of my veteran friends to. And it's not just about that, too. You also have other resources in place. You have talk about Phoenix Rising.
Right. So Operation Phoenix was kind of the code name we gave to the 90-day program. We would love to help as many vets as we can. You know, unfortunately, we are a nonprofit. We don't get any government funding, even though the VA grudgingly, you know, can't say. Well, to give you an example, we had the Associated Press here. They came in for 2 days and videoed and took pictures and interviewed all of our veterans to write a story that went internationally. It was about 3 months ago. And they spoke to, I don't know how many veterans they interviewed, but it was countless. It was, you know, 15 or 20. And everyone said the same thing. You know, I was down to my last hope before I came to Gray Team. You know, I just didn't know where else to turn. I was not able to get the help that I needed through the VA or through private doctors even. You know, I was on my last, you know, about to give up and call it quits. And after all of that evidence and looking at all the studies we've done with universities, Florida Atlantic University collects data with us you know, their professors and their doctors. We have a medical board and a medical advisory board. We have a director of medical here. We have everything in place, and as you said, we're totally transparent. But it was really interesting because when the final article came out and went worldwide, you know, and they said, you know, Gray Team has had over 760 veterans through the and active duty soldiers through the program since our inception in 2016, and we've never lost even one to suicide. And with the recent numbers coming out from DOD and Duke University study, which came out in January, that said the number has been underreported by the VA, that it is not 17 to 22 a day, it's 40 to 44 a day in reality. And even knowing that we've never had a suicide ever in our entire existence, and everyone who's gone through the program, they still went to the VA, the head of the VA in Washington, D.C., and they said, talk to us about Gray Team. And the head of the VA spokesman said to them, well, we don't really know what they're doing. We don't know if it works. It may even be really harmful. But, you know, we can't tell veterans not to go there. You know, but we know what we know, and we know what we do works. And I was, I don't want to say shocked by reading that, because I just expected it. You know, they very good at what they do. We certainly aren't going to do surgery here, anything like that. So to a VA medical center, when you have trauma and in a car accident or surgery, heart attack, of course you need to take care of that. But as far as preemptive strike, you know, preventative medicine, they don't know anything about wellness. They don't know anything about nutrition. They don't even want to talk about it. And they don't even want to look at alternatives. You know, it's like we get this much money that we have to spend on pharmaceutical drugs. It's in our budget. If we don't spend it, we lose it next year. You know, so we're going to spend it on opioids. You know, yeah, we're going to create a few drug addicts. It's the cost of doing business. And I don't know. I want to say, look, I love the VA. I've gone to the VA. I'm a product of the VA. I've had two surgeries at the VA. I have been helped by the VA, but I will not take the drugs that the VA sends me. For I feel like there are a lot of other methods that they should be exploring. And I hope that even though we're totally transparent, at some point they'll actually look at all the studies we've done and everything else. And just as you say, we post everything. Maybe something will change, and maybe they'll begin to actually treat the root cause and begin saving lives. And that's my hope for the future.
And I think this is a really important mission, and to help spread the word about one of the things that I did notice as I was going through, stalking your Facebook, the site Facebook, October 17th, you have an event coming up. I'm sad that you're too far away from me to go to Boca Raton, but you've got a free headshots for veterans, October 17th from 0900 to 1700. I think that's fantastic. Like, what a great way to help veterans and just get their foot in the door and help propel them forward.
Absolutely. And that's something that we always try to do. It's not always just about suicide prevention. You know, one of the pain points for a lot of veterans is finding gainful employment that they're passionate about. And how do we do that? You know, you got to start with a nice, you know, portrait of yourself, you know, in a jacket. We even supply the clothing. We give away suits and ties and shoes all the time so that they can look their best when they go on an interview. You know, trying to establish financial security is a huge thing for these young kids who are, you know, just coming back from Afghanistan after the pullout. You know, they kind of waddled back and forth with college. You know, maybe it's the right time, maybe it's not the right time. It's hard for me to concentrate. Maybe I should just get a job. you know, I'm running low on funds, and unfortunately, a lot of the issues with hiring veterans are, you know, well, I know that you commanded, you know, 200 men for life and death, and I know that you're responsible for $46 million worth of equipment, but we're going to start you on the loading dock, stacking boxes, and if you do well in a year, maybe, you know, we'll let you drive the truck that unloads there, you know. And for a lot of vets, that's, wow, I was such a badass in the military, you know, I had all this responsibility, and now I can either do that or I can sell cell phones at T-Mobile, you know. That's really difficult. So we do try, we do a lot of community outreach. We have a lot of events that require them to come out of their homes, not isolate, you know, be part of the community. And then we speak to a lot of employers about hiring these guys, especially when they come out of our program and they're pretty much squared away soldiers at that point. You know, they've got a handle on their PTSD. You know, I'm not going to say they're 100% cured, but they've dropped a lot of their body fat. Their hormones are balanced now. You know, they're not lethargic. They're not lazy. They go to bed when the sun goes down. They get up when the sun comes up. You know, they're structured, just like they had the structure in the military.
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, kind of really important. Like, that's the full circle, right? They come to you for help. They get the help. The next step is gainful employment. Let's help you get that gainful employment. So now you can put to use all the tools. You're feeling great. Let's help you use all those tools so that you can take care of yourself. Because that's the one thing I have found that when I have spoken to veterans who have gotten out and have struggled with their transition, most of those folks have been active duty and were career military and never had to write a resume or go on a job interview. Or because as opposed to reservists who kind of had a civilian career, and then they served their X amount of time and then they got out. Most of us have something to go to, but I have found that if you were a career military, or maybe your military job didn't roll into or translate to a civilian job, those are the people that struggle. And we say, okay, yeah, here's all your paperwork. Here's your, you know, here's how you apply for this, that, and the other, but we don't show them when they get out of the military, how to write a resume, how to prep for an interview, dress for an interview. There's none of that. And I think we're doing our men and women a disservice by not preparing them for those kinds of things when they get out. It's like, okay, yeah, here's your DD-214. Okay, bye. No, we have to set them up for success. I mean, yes, there's medical stuff that they may need, but we need to give them some tools to use when they get out. And that, I think that's one of the things that we could do. It's so simple, like help them write a resume, help them look good, feel good, and give them a professional picture so they can have the confidence to walk into an interview in the first place. I mean, it just boggles my mind. Like, I just don't understand sometimes. I think I could probably drive myself crazy.
No, it seems so obvious. It truly does. And it does to me too. And that's why we do the things that we do, you know. And we couldn't be more proud when one of our guys goes on to accomplish great things and take good care of themselves and their family. And that's, I'm a volunteer, you know, I've never taken a dime from this organization. And I can't tell you what I get in return is priceless, you know, to see these people who are floundering, you know, they're like a rowboat on the ocean. You know, they don't have an anchor. They don't have any direction. You know, they're not sure how to get back into civilization and become a civilian. And I think part of the problem is that doesn't ever happen. I think that you are a veteran until the day you die. I don't think you ever become a civilian. You will never go back to that way of thinking. And that's something that needs to be said to these individuals, because they really don't understand why they don't fit in, why they want to keep working until the mission is accomplished. And everybody around them says, oh, it's 5 o'clock, time to go home. And they're like, yeah, but we're not done, you know, because that's what we learned in the military, you know. And I went in at 17, right out of high school. So for me, you know, that was my formative years, was learning, you know, to be a soldier. And that's my attitude. You keep going until you finish the job, you know, and if it's 2, 3, 4 in the morning, that's what it takes. But you get very frustrated when you're working in the civilian world and nobody else thinks that way, you know, and all of a sudden you don't want to work there anymore. It seems pointless because you came from this environment, this different culture, you know, where you had a purpose and a passion and you were protecting the guy next to you and you were doing something for your country. And now, you know, you're trying to boost some sales numbers up for the end of the week's goal or something like that. And you're right. It's a huge problem. But we're able to solve it for at least the numbers that come through us.
Yeah, it's funny. You're talking about, you know, they're not used to, civilians aren't used to, you know, how we are. Like I'm a reservist. So I do 1 week in a month and 2 weeks a year. I come home for my 2 weeks and I'm annoyed. Like, can I go back on active duty? Because I come home after 2 weeks and I'm like, oh my God, I can't right now. I need to go back, where everything just kind of functions differently. There's none of this, well, that's not my job. And there's just a different mindset. There is a different chain of command. It just, you get very used to it very quickly. And like, you know, even when you're deployed, you get into your battle rhythm and then you come home and you're like, what the hell? Like, I mean, I remember being annoyed that I had to actually not wear my uniform. I had to like comb my hair and actually pick my clothes and go food shopping. And I'm like, this is too much stress. Like, I had nothing else to think about but get up, put my hair up, put on my uniform, you know, put my gun on and then go to work and do what I had to do. And then you come home and the phone's ringing and there's lights flashing across the, you know, your room at night that you're not used to, the sounds, just the everyday is just things that people just don't think about, that when you get into this rhythm, that's your normal and that's all you know until somebody tells you different. I mean, a lot of veterans, they get out of the service and they still want to serve. They still want to have a mission and a purpose. And I think we need to do a better job of preparing them when they get out to find that mission. Now, people like myself, physicians, nurse, like that's, we're going to get out and we're still going to, maybe we will get out of medicine entirely. But there is a population that we really need to think about and look at and network. And that is the one common theme that I hear in a lot of these groups that I'm a part of, is that, you know, there's just something about military service and military life and even being a military spouse and being a military child. Like, there's just things that they are never going to be able to relate to, civilians who have never experienced what it's like when mom, dad, husband, wife is away for 9 months to a year and comes home and, you know, doesn't even know what to do or how to function because they need time to readjust to the life that was to versus what the life is now. So you mentioned that you are a nonprofit. You have a gala coming up April 4th in Boca Raton, correct?
That is correct, yes.
Yes, and I got a little excited. I'm like, ooh, maybe this will be a nice little gala to go to, make a long weekend out of it. And then I looked at my calendar and I'm like, oh, wait, my niece is getting married that weekend. I should probably go to the wedding. But tell me about the gala. Who's coming? What's it about? And what else is going to be, like, you have auctions going on at the gala, like silent auctions. What else is going on at the gala?
Well, we do galas gray team style, and they're off the chain. If you go to our website or go to, we call our gala, They Are Not Bulletproof. And if you go to theyarenotbulletproof.com, you actually can see some of the highlights of last year's gala. And it was, we had Lieutenant Colonel Alan West was there. We auctioned him off. You wanted a shooting day with him, and then
he
barbecued for you at his ranch in Texas after you got to fire his machine gun collection and all that kind of stuff.
Wow.
But we did it at the most beautiful property down here, the Boca Raton Resort. Which is a very, very high-end, exclusive, member-only club. And in the grand ballroom, we actually drove Humvees in with turrets on top and 50 caliber machine guns and missile launchers right inside the ballroom. We had cannons, we had machine gun nests. And this is, you know, very hoity-toity, bougie. And we brought in two big MMPVs, you know, fully armored up vehicles with 50 caliber machine guns on the turrets on top. We had 5-ton trucks. I mean, it was like an invasion. And there was a paratrooper hanging from the ceiling with a parachute. And I mean, it was really real craziness. And and a lot of guests, Governor DeSantis, it just, the list went on and on. And this year, our gala coming up, we're going to top that. So, I can't give anything away, but if you're curious, there is a small video that'll show the highlights from last year. And I promise you this year's will be even more out of control than last year's. So it's not a typical gala. It does raise our funding so that we can continue to operate for the next year. And so it is very important, but it's also important to us that, you know, if you do go to philanthropic galas, you know, the slang term is, oh, it's just another chicken dinner, you know, and you go and there's a couple of speeches and then, you know, write us a check and go and the DJ plays some music and then you go home, you know, and we wanted to do something entirely different. And so ours are very, very different because we bring in soldiers, Marines, Air Force, Army. We have, you know, all the weapons of war. We have everything. And for a lot of civilians, you know, this is the only opportunity that they have to get up and close and personal with the military. As you mentioned previously, a few minutes ago, there is a big disconnect now between civilians and the military. And unfortunately, you know, during the Greatest Generation, World War II, you know, everybody was a veteran. And if they weren't, their neighbor was a veteran or their cousin was or their uncle. So everybody knew a veteran and they knew the sacrifices and they understood. And there was a patriotic spirit where veterans were just beloved. Mm-hmm. And today there's a huge disconnect. You know, we had some of the kids who came back from Afghanistan, the Marines, after the pullout, they decided they were going to try and go back to school right away and use their GI Bill. And I remember them coming to me and saying, it's so bizarre sitting next to a kid who's a year younger than me. And he goes, what do you mean you went to war? We're not at war. There's been no war since Vietnam, you know, and how you're telling me that 6 months ago, you know, you were fighting for your life, you know, on some hilltop in Afghanistan. I don't even know what you're talking about. Nobody, there's no wars going on. There's no fighting, you know, and this kid, like he literally, he's like the biggest challenge I've had is, you know, I had to hold a 1 minute keg stand with my fraternity brothers at college. You know, how do I relate to this? You know,
right. Like, that's hard.
It really is. And so these kids are dropping right back out of school because they can't sit next to somebody who is completely disconnected. And so there are so few people in the military now. And that story needs to be out. And that's one of the things we also do at Great Team is we do community events so that the public gets to meet soldiers, active duty, reservists, and veterans. We do all the parades, we do everything. And we encourage, you know, dinners together and things like that, golf outings, surfing, things where we get the military people to interact with the civilian counterparts. And a lot of times it's a learning experience on both sides, not just on one.
Yeah, and I'm going to, so we have a little video I'm going to show, and everybody's going to have to bear with me with the technology, because I think I got it, but we're going to hang with me. I think I got it.
Thank you. First off, I just want to thank everyone for coming out tonight. You know, as an Army veteran, it means so much to see so many faces here with all the beautiful thought of furthering this mission. And this mission is critical. You know, we pass around a number all the time, constantly talking about 22 veterans a day take their lives. And about 4 months ago, a landmark study was done by the Department of Defense and Duke University. And they said that that VA number is underreported, that the actual number is closer to 42. 42. And these aren't numbers. These are people. These are our sons, daughters, mothers, fathers, brothers, and sisters. And I don't want to end on a somber note, because we're here to celebrate DDS for Vets. So I want to tell you that there is hope out there. There are programs, there are alternatives. And yes, the VA does what the VA does. And they're very good at taking care of our symptoms, but not actually dealing with the root problem. And I can tell you that the one organization that I'm very proud to be president of works with DDS for Vets. We are using a completely holistic program that uses absolutely zero pharmaceutical intervention. And since 2016, right here in Florida, we've pumped, almost 740 through the doors of active duty and veterans. And we have never lost a single one to suicide.
Right.
Wow.
I mean, just incredible and amazing. And I'm so happy that you were on tonight to help spread this message and the amazing work that you are doing. I have put all the information in the chat, all the places you could find Carrie and the Gray Team organization. They are not bulletproof. Check out their Facebook page, their website. There are great, great things coming out of this organization, Carrie. Thank you so much for coming on the show tonight and spreading your message of hope and strength for veterans.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it. And if anybody has any questions whatsoever, please feel free to reach out to us. We respond right away on any social media platform, and we're on all of them.
Thank you again. And this is the Dog Tag Diva, reminding you to greet each day with purpose, passion, and tenacity, and be kind to each other.
That's the show for today, everyone. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week with an all-new show. And remember, you can listen to us again and again. The podcast of this radio show is available right after we go off the air tonight, anywhere that you can get your podcast episodes. And thanks for joining us today. I'd like to take a moment to talk about something close to my heart. Military Broadcast Radio is doing incredible work to support our veterans and bring their voices to the world. They rely on your generous donations and your dedicated volunteer hours to make it happen. I encourage you to consider supporting MBR in any way, form that you can. Use this QR code that's attached to the picture, or you can go to our website at mbradio.us. That's MikeBravoRadio.us. To learn more about how you can donate or volunteer even just an hour a week from your home, help make a difference in the lives of our veterans. Because once again, we're all here for you and not for us. We're giving a veterans a voice.